We are pleased to welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Currently, he is a player agent and a principal of Veritas Hockey. Previously, he was the assistant general manager of the Minnesota Wild. He's also a published author. The book is called How to Bake an NHL Franchise from Scratch, The First Era of the Minnesota Wild. It's available on Amazon and Kindle and Kobo. Pleased to welcome back to the show, Tom Lynn. Tom, good afternoon. Thanks for joining us.
Hello, man, and don't forget I'm still practicing law for all your legal needs down here in the Twin Cities.
Yeah, I mean, the Twin Cities, we'll grant you that, but we have our own lawyer in studio for your legal needs here in Winnipeg.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
That's great.
Tom, obviously got to start with this new book, and it's a terrific read. We recommend it to everybody, and we'll send out a link to it as well. Why did you decide to write a book about your experiences as the assistant general manager of the Minnesota Wild?
Yeah, it wasn't a decision so much as a process, or process, I should say, for your audience. After I left the Wild, and a whole bunch of us, new owner came in and fired us all, so Risebrow and me and Tommy Thompson and Chris Snow and so many people moved on, and working for the Flames and the Rangers and the rest, but we get together, you know, we see each other on the road, we talk, an occasional holiday, and for the first couple of years afterwards, we'd swap stories, and inevitably someone would say, boy, there should be a book about this, or someone should write a book. And Chris Snow, who now works for the Flames, was the writer. He'd worked for the Boston Globe, and he didn't have time to undertake it. And Tommy Thompson from Winnipeg there is a great writer, but he's full-time with the Rangers as well, and he wasn't doing it. So I decided to put together a series of blogs, because the hockey news in some places are always bugging me for content. And I thought, well, how about, 10 or 12 blogs, some of the good stories. But once I started writing it here and there, on road trips and hotels or on airplanes, I quickly came up with, I think, 20 after a couple months, and it was over 80 pages. And I thought, this is probably a book, and it eventually evolved into a book over a year and a half.
It's a really good read, Tom. As Drew mentioned, I have it on Kindle. And when you're reading the book, and you really detail working for Doug Risebrow, who people may know from his Montreal days, Calgary days, and of course Minnesota days, what was the most fulfilling part for you of working for Doug Risebrow? And conversely, what was the most frustrating part?
Oh, it was just funny. I was thinking about that today because I thought about something Doug had once said to Tommy and I. Now, Tommy Thompson from Winnipeg there was a lawyer as well, a trial lawyer like me before we get into hockey. And he said to us once after the trade deadline, he said, Tom, meaning me, Tommy Lynn, you seem to remember everything you read. And you, Thompson, you seem to remember everything you hear. He was a little bit irritated, I think. But it just goes to show you Doug's powers of observation were always amazing. I learned so much from that, from being someone who's really wedded to the written word and being a lawyer and very logical and the rest. Doug was intuitive. We'd walk out of meetings sometimes, whether it was Jacques or the ownership or a player we were interviewing, and he would have insights that I had not picked up on. But once he spoke them, I'd say, okay, now I saw what you saw, but now I see how you put it together, why that player will work for us, why that one won't. But the players he got early on, like Wes Walls and Antti Luoksonen and Philip Kuba, guys who had been discarded by NHL teams, but in talking to them, watching them, he knew they could make it. That insight he had was the amazing thing. And the negative side, sometimes that insight, I couldn't get in touch with it. We're very different people. So we clashed often, and I love that. I mean, I come from a big family. We fight a lot, and we argue a lot. Doug and I were very, very close, and still are. But if for an outsider walking to the office and hear him yell at me and me yell back something from office to office, you'd think we were sworn enemies because we made it like an old people's marriage. We made it together, but we were always arguing.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Our guest is Tom Lynn, currently a player's agent for Veritas Hockey, author of a new book called How to Bake an NHL Franchise from Scratch, The First Era of the Minnesota Wild. Tom, in the book, you outline the impact that one person in particular had on the Wild organization, despite the fact that they never actually worked for the organization. Can you describe the impact that Scotty Bowman had on the beginning and the origins of the Minnesota Wild?
Yeah, I mean, that could be... I made it a subsection of the book, but it could have been even longer had I wanted to bore the reader even more. 500 pages. I'd say, in summary, it's something... I noticed the culture that we were building from early on into the first 2 years. And then one day, Doug and I, as often he would do, he'd give me a nice lecture on something in hockey, and I really learned a lot. I think we were on an airplane. he said, who do you think had the most effect on their organization? So by then, I think we had just finished a playoff run in 03 and had been a very successful run. Mm-hmm. And I thought about it. I thought about the owner buying the team and setting the tone, and Jack Sperling as the president, and Doug as GM for a while, and Jacques, who had so much to do with it. So I picked Jacques, and he said, well, you're kind of right. He said, it's Scotty Bowman. I said, how? He said, look, we all played for Scotty. When he said we all, he meant Mario, he and Jacques. The three of us played for Scotty Montreal. That's how we learned about hockey. We came out of high school to play, really. We were young men and spent our formative years with him. So how you practice, what time you eat, how you treat players, how you treat the game, how important things are. He said the attention to detail in the defensive approach. Now, the Canadians gave up the fewest goals in the league the 4 years running when they won the Stanley Cups in the 70s. So he said the attention to detail, the defense, the coverage, all that comes from Scotty. And you add in Mike Ramsey, another assistant coach who played for Scotty with three teams. And you add in Guy Lapointe, who was number two mm-hmm. in the scouting ranks, and he had learned under Scotty in the 70s how to recognize players. He said, indirectly, we all learned from Scotty. It's kind of like a Bill Walsh, you know, coaching the 49ers years ago, producing so many head coaches in football, and he affected the NFL so much. Scotty has done the same thing with the Wild, the Blackhawks, the Red Wings, and so on.
When you're reading the book, when people, of course, encourage people to pick it up, Tom, you have a really interesting chapters on the expansion draft, and people forget, and I forgot, the rules that the NHL implemented in terms of drafting a certain number of players from certain teams, and if you drafted goaltenders, then what would happen? And you took a really interesting angle, the Wild did, and with your thought process behind that, in terms of mapping out a way to draft with Columbus, who you were coming into the National Hockey League with, in order to maximize the return that both of you could get out of the expansion draft. But that, you know, almost fell by the wayside there with Doug McLean and Columbus. Can you tell, you know, the listeners some of the stories about Doug McLean and maybe him being a little bit, shall we say, temperamental?
Yes, he definitely flies by the seat of his emotional pants. in his career there, which was opposite from us. I find it fascinating right now because there's talk of expansion in the NHL. Whether it be one or two teams, it probably needs to be two. And an expansion draft now would be guided mostly by analytics, I think, somewhat by culture. But just imagine you all had 1,400 players to choose from in an expansion draft for next year between draft picks, AHL players, and NHL players. You'd have spreadsheets and records and mm-hmm. analytics all over the place, whereas in our day, we were attempting to do analytics, but it was by cut and paste. It was by trying to do it. It's almost like piloting an airplane with charts back 25 years ago before it went to GPS. And so we had set up a whole system of analytics with a large staff. We went through mock drafts and really looked at how the expansion draft could develop if Columbus took player A and we took player B. Next time around, if they took player B, we took player A. Next time around, if they took player C, who would we take? Mm-hmm. And so with the rules of the expansion draft saying that if you lost a goalie, you couldn't lose a defenseman and vice versa, and you could only lose two players total, there were countless iterations of how many expansion drafts could be had. And so we went through it all and discovered that if Columbus and the Wild came together and formed an agreement by which we both privately agreed which players we'd take, we could screw the current teams. The current teams are trying to screw us by only leaving available in the expansion draft.
That's right, yeah.
A few good players, you know? Sorry.
No, go ahead, Tom.
Too fast. But we're going to leave a few good players and a lot of bad ones, and then the two teams, Columbus and Minnesota, would battle each other for those and X out a lot of teams. If we could come to an agreement and divide up the good players, as it were, and not take in a lot of salary, we'd both win. So we came to that agreement a couple days or a day or so before the expansion draft, and then it all broke apart a little after 11 o'clock at night, the night before the expansion draft. So we went back to the drawing board.
And that was, you know, Doug McLean's reaction and bailing out, and you obviously pick up the book to read more about that. Tom, you also mentioned many things in the book that I found very interesting, but something else that I found interesting in the book was the fact that the Wild players, and certainly Jacques Lemaire plays a large part in this, will actually end up likely getting more through arbitration in terms of dollars than they would on the open market because of how playing for the Wild kind of inflated their statistics and used, for example, Andrew Burnett, who people probably remember, and now he's an assistant coach with the Wild, as an example of that.
Yes, and it was a phenomenon that I identified in our second year, but became a real point of contention, and I was the only contract negotiator there, so it was mostly settled upon me. You had a lot of players. I mean, all players make the NHL had success, right? Everyone was going to be great in junior or college and the rest, and a number of the players that came to us had not had the success in their careers they'd wanted or expected. So they come out of the minors, they come out of Europe, they come out of situations where they're not everyday players with their NHL teams, and all of a sudden they're put with the Wild. Andrew Burnett's a good example. He had some success, but never really been wanted, been exposed in two expansion drafts and drafted late by the Capitals. So he comes to us and gets a bunch of points, but with so many players we had, if we set them free, if we didn't re-sign them, like as we did with Brunette and Lauksonen, they often sign for less elsewhere. So we get in an arbitration situation where they have comparable players, say a 15-goal guy with Detroit, a 15-goal guy with the Rangers, a 15-goal guy with L.A., and I'd have to say, look, those teams are going to pay them a lot more. If I set you free in the market, you don't have Jacques, you don't have our culture to support you, they're going to see you as the same player who struggled up and down from the minors your whole career. That's a tough thing to say to a player as an agent. And it could become acrimonious. I really had to stick handles through it. But the truth was borne out by history. Is Brunette, I think he was in the 1.4 to 1.7 range his last arbitration year, just at the lockout there. And the next year he signed with Colorado for $850 a year, which just shows the vast difference that our, I shouldn't say overpricing, the value added by the Wild's culture and coaching really made a difference to what players could make.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Our guest is player agent Tom Lynn. Tom is currently a principal with Veritas Hockey. He's formerly the assistant general manager of the Minnesota Wild. He's also the author of a book called How to Bake an NHL Franchise from Scratch, the First Era of the Minnesota Wild. It's available on Amazon.
If you listen now, let's quickly cut in here. If you listen to this show, you should be getting that book.
That's pretty much it.
That's awesome.
Tom, as always, as an assistant general manager and in your role, there's always some awkward situations. Probably one that would be up at the top of the list is the time you had to drive Billy Tibbetts to the airport after you had to cut him because he had been arrested. How was that car ride for you?
Yeah, I didn't put it in the book, and I wanted to be fair to Billy as well, who's still out there trying to make his way in the world. But I think your listeners would remember Billy Tibbetts well enough from his days in the NHL. He had been a good junior player, but he spent some time in jail on a statutory rape charge, I think between the age of 19 or 21 or thereabouts. Came back into hockey, eventually made it as a regular player with the Penguins before flaring out up and down. He was a Wild player. He was a fighter. He got suspended quite often in all the professional leagues he played in, and he had a heck of a reputation and a lot of tattoos. So one year in Houston, we were looking like we might not make the playoffs. One of our few times under Todd McClellan, we had 8 games left, and we weren't quite tough enough or character enough. So I told him I was signing Billy Tibbetts out of the ECHL on a PTO, pro tryout. And boy, the coaches didn't like that. And I said, look, you're not winning. I'm your manager. So I'm going to have to do it. If you guys are winning, I wouldn't have to do this. So we bring Billy in, covered with tattoos. I don't know if he was on steroids, but he looked like a bodybuilder in the locker room, and the players were afraid of him. The coaches were afraid of him. Cam Stewart used to keep a stick with him at all times, he said, just in case Billy lost his temper. Walking around the locker room, there's Cam with a stick, and Cam was a pretty tough player. So he had them all scared good, but my deal with Billy, and I really liked Billy, I got along with him well, was if you get in any trouble, you're gone. Like, no discussion, no appeal, no nothing. This is your last chance of last chances, and he agreed. And then after a playoff loss one night, he was arrested for rolling through a stop sign in Houston and then just losing his mind to the cops. They told me later, we didn't want to arrest him, but he kept screaming at us, pounding on our car. They arrested him. And the next day, I told my boss, Risebrow, I said, well, you got to cut him. But Risebrow said, look, you signed him. It's not the staff's fault, the trainers, the usual guys that drive to the airport. You go tell him in his apartment he's cut, and then you drive to the airport and get him out of town. If he gets arrested again, we're going to look bad. So off I go to Billy's apartment. I have to explain to him he's cut. I've got to go through the tears and the yelling and everything else, get in the car, and then there's traffic. There's construction. It's Houston. I got 2 hours to get to the airport. I'm gripping the wheel. I'm taking side streets. He starts telling me, well, we're not going to make the flight, Mr. Lynn. And I said, oh, no, we're going to make the flight. We're going to make this flight. I went up the side at one point off an off-ramp and through. I pulled up to the, where you drop off people at the airport. I screeched to a halt. Was throwing his bags out of the trunk as he said, I don't know if I'm going to make it. He's like, good luck, Billy, you'll make it. And I hopped in the car and took off, and I heard his entire life story in those 2 hours in the car. And it was tough stuff, but that's part of being an assistant GM.
Our guest is Tom Lynn, author of How to Bake an NHL Franchise from Scratch, the First Era of the Minnesota Wild. Now, Tom, I've never had the pleasure of playing hockey with you, but given that you're the assistant general manager for an NHL franchise, there's a big sheet of ice usually right in front of you. It stands to reason that there'd be some staff hockey games. Fortunately, yeah. you had a pretty decent staff in which to play hockey with. How was it playing in games with guys like Jacques Lemaire, Doug Risebrough, and you know the litany of ex-NHLers that are in front offices around the NHL?
That was cool. I mean, the coolest part is probably the people you play with. It's like the AHL, every year the AHL does an all-star game where the GMs play each other, and I got to play with Thomas Steen and Dan Bylsma, guys like that, actually in Winnipeg a few years ago. But the great thing about the Wilds thing was Jacques would cancel practice rarely, maybe once a month, maybe twice, you know, where he'd give the players a day off. But on those days, then we were allowed to take the ice the team had, whether on the road or at home, so we'd bring our stuff with us. So on a given day, it would be the trainers, all of whom played hockey. Tony DeCosta, the equipment manager, is a goalie from Winnipeg, and Don Fuller is a player from British Columbia. Then you had Jacques and Mario that often play, sometimes play goalie. And Jacques would yell at me, keep it down, keep the puck low. But we had a great time spinning around. And, of course, there were always players. So if Gabrick or Bouchard or Brad Brown or anyone was coming back from injury, they might be on your line as well. So from being a JV college player who gave up the sport at age 20, so many years later I'd be streaking down the ice, yelling to Gabrick for the puck, and it was fun.
Tom, you've mentioned Winnipeg a few times in the interview, and Don Baisley, of course, the late Don Baisley, you had a relationship with, and you make an interesting point in the book, very interesting point, I thought, that you know Don Baisley taught you that sometimes negotiations were more simple than they appeared, in that they really were based on leverage, and if you had it, you could use it, and if you didn't, well, then you couldn't. Can you expand on that and also your relationship with Don?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I wouldn't be an agent now if it weren't for Don. Because you know, the cadre of agents have a poor reputation generally, not because all of them, because of the worst guys. And I didn't want to be stained with it. I didn't want to compete with some of these people who are less than honest. And when I was deciding whether to be an agent or not over 3 months, I spoke to Don. And I realized, here's a man who I respect as much as anyone in hockey or any lawyer I know. He did it the right way. He was very honest and he was very straightforward. And I thought, if I can be like Don, then this is something I can pursue with honor. So I owe him a lot for that. But what he taught me in negotiation was, he said, look, Tom, and he was right. He said, if I have a player and there's two other players like him and trying to place him as a free agent, if I'm yelling at GMs or being mean-spirited or trying to catch them on this and that, they're going to call someone else. Unless my player is clearly better. But if they're in the mix and we all have right wings that are 18 goal scorers, I want to do the right thing here. So the leverage, the amount of money that this player can get in the market, that's my fulcrum. So if I know he's a $700,000 player, that's what I play to. And we did that with Kai Nerman, a Finnish player he signed. Mm-hmm. He said, all the smoke and mirrors, plenty of stuff in the press and the rest, you can just irritate the management. They're pretty sophisticated. They know what they should pay, and it's about the leverage. And I'd note that Don was not an easy negotiator. When Don said to you, this player is worth a certain amount, you paid it, eventually, as the Ducks found out with Paul Kariya after a 52-goal season. But there wasn't any yelling or name-calling. Or, you're going to lose, and this and that. Don would just politely say, okay, well, thank you for the offer. My client is not prepared to play for that, and you have my number, and call me when you're ready. And that's how he negotiated. He knew the numbers, and he stuck to them.
Tom, we'll let you go on this last question. And we've talked about your time as the assistant general manager, and, of course, we mentioned off the start that you're currently a player agent with the Veritas Hockey. How has your time in the front office really prepared yourself as an agent in the NHL in this day and age?
Well, that's a good question, because the reality of a lot of things is different than the outside. You found that in your own lives, we always do. So the reality of being a head coach as opposed to an assistant coach, it really makes a change. Assistant GM to GM, it looks different even though you're right next to it. And from my part, seeing what really happens in an NHL draft table, both good and bad, and understanding how amateur scouts and organization scouts and how the NHL puts pressure on teams and how they do the contract negotiation, how their arbitration process works and all that. So I learned not only for the Wild, but for the whole league, because I was involved as a fairly successful assistant GM in some policy setting. So flipping that to the other side, when I speak to a player and the mystery of, I just got drafted by the Blackhawks, what does that mean? The mystery of that for the player, I can say to them, well, here's what it means from the other side. Here's what they expect. Here's what they want. I know Stan Bowman personally. I know the scout that drafted you. So it's a different perspective, because I was sitting in the room, the old fly in the wall, for 9 years. and at the same time, the agent world has been a learning experience for me. Amateur hockey was largely not open to me because I was a pro guy on the other side. So now I'm going to Bantam Midget Games for the last 5 years. I've learned a lot about developing players who are 14, 15, 16, 17 years old, and what I can give them is the perspective that when they sign an NHL deal, what does this mean to the organization? Why are they sending you to Binghamton? Is there a good restaurant in Binghamton? I even know that. But it helps a lot.
Tom Lynn is the author of How to Bake an NHL Franchise from Scratch, the first era of the Minnesota Wild. It's available on Amazon and really wherever you would find books in this day and age. Tom, appreciate the time as always, and we'll hopefully see you soon in Winnipeg.
You'll see me very soon. I guess I owe you guys a trip to a deli somewhere.
You know, you don't have to tell us twice. We'll meet you there. Thanks, Tom.
All right, take care.
Take care.